Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for joining the NOLA Drink Show this week, friends. Happy to have you here as always. And hey, if you're listening on the radio, we're here in New Orleans, kind of like spring almost. And I, always joke that we get about 15 to 20 non-contiguous days of what I would call true spring, you know, where the weather is like real pleasant, around 70, not too humid, all that good stuff. So, you know, we've got a little bit of that going on right now. So it's nice to be outside, get some fresh air, go for a walk, all that good stuff. Support a local eatery or bar where you can, where it's allowed. And if you're being responsible and they're being responsible, everybody's being responsible, sit outside and support some local businesses, right? That's also a great thing to do. Got a really good show here for you this week, friends. Really interesting stuff. We are going to be talking about reducing waste and trying to achieve a higher level of sustainability behind the bar. So basically, obviously, in bars and, by connection, restaurants as well. We're chatting, or we will be, chatting with three beverage professionals. Matthew Gardner, who is the owner, co-owner of Hoo Hoo's Ginger Brew, a very fine ginger brew made here in New Orleans. He's also a bartender at the St. Rock Market, which, thanks to them, that's where we record this featured interview. We also speak with Cheyenne Serene, and they are the bar manager at Bakery Bar, a very fine Daubage cake maker with also a restaurant and a fine craft cocktail bar. And Jennifer O'Blenis, who is the managing partner of El Cucuy, which is a new sort of Mexican street food. Not sort of, it is a Mexican street food taco spot in New Orleans. And Jen is also very active with the United States Bartenders Guild. So it's a really great conversation just talking about what was so interesting about is we give you some specific ideas telling if you're a bartender, if you're in the trade, some specific ideas, but also these things kind of relate to maybe doing a home bar and how you handle waste at home, but also just looking to support operations that are trying to do this stuff. And so if you're a consumer, if you're a customer, we think you're going to find this conversation very interesting about how bars are trying to take steps to reduce waste and achieve, as I said, a greater level of sustainability. So we talk about some specific ideas, maybe some things to look for, things to ask about when you're out patronizing a place. And then also talking about some of the, one of the most interesting parts of the conversation to me was the thought processes that go and how you constantly evaluate reducing waste. And it also helps businesses save costs, right? And so it's another really important aspect of sustainability is the economic aspect of sustainability. You know, basically, if you're not in business, you're not sustainable, right? So it's a really, really interesting conversation that I think whether you're an actual, you know, bartender, somebody in the industry, or if you're a consumer, an enthusiast, a bar patron, a restaurant patron, you're going to find a lot in this conversation that I think is informative and inspiring and just kind of, you know, maybe changing some ways of thinking or considering things from a different angle from which you had not thought from before. So friends, what we're going to do here on the NOLA Drink Show, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to bounce over to St. Rock Market, talking about sustainability and reducing waste behind the bar. Come on back.
Well, after I'm through.
Brought to you by the St. Rock Market, a local food hall featuring 12 unique food and beverage entrepreneurs serving globally inspired meals from barbecue platters to Mediterranean cuisine. Located at 2381 St. Claude Avenue, the St. Rock Market is open every day of the week for breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, and cocktails. We offer online ordering, curbside pickup, and both indoor and patio dining. Learn more at strockmarket.com.
Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show, friends. As always, happy to have you here. Yeah, you know that. And you also probably know, because I just said it before the break, we are here at the St. Rock Market in the St. Rock neighborhood of New Orleans. Happy to be back here. And we're doing a show, as you know. We're talking about sustainability, and we're talking about reducing waste and other considerations about trying to run a good operation from that side of things when it comes to bars and restaurants and adjacent businesses here in the hospitality industry is our topic for the day. And I'm pleased to be joined by three great guests. One who's been a victim, I'll start there, because one who's been a victim of this show about 2 or 3 years ago, Matthew Gardner, who is the owner of Hoo Hoo Soda Company. Matthew, how are you?
I'm well today. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good to see you, man.
You too.
Been a little while.
It has been a while.
Yep. And you've obviously recovered from your traumatic experience of being on this show about 2 or 3 years ago. You come back.
I have come back. It took years to recover, but I did make it.
Right.
I
mean, when you say years, you just mean the past 10, 11 months of COVID, right?
And then... Which seems like... A decade?
Sure. Yeah. It was a long healing process, but I'm glad you're here. Right,
we made it.
And Cheyenne Serene, who is the bar manager at Bakery Bar. Hi, Cheyenne.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for making time, and nice to see you.
Good to see you, too.
I appreciate it. And Jen Oblenis, my pal, who is, among other things, the managing partner of El Cucuy, which is a fine new taco shop and a restaurant.
Mexican street food. Yeah. Think of ordering from a taco truck, but at a restaurant.
Oh, I like that. That's cool. Can't get run over.
Exactly.
Which is
exactly
very cool. Right on. And you're also currently the USBG chapter, New Orleans chapter president.
But
you hold several other ranks and titles.
Yeah,
with USBG.
So I am the New Orleans chapter president, but I'm also the Southern Region head chair, and I sit on the national board of all of the chapter. All of the regions have members that kind of represent them and kind of are advocates for the regions.
Okay. Very cool. And I'm going to have all three of the guests here. We're going to tell you at the end of the third thing before we close out the radio portion of the show a little bit about how you can come find them at their respective businesses or find, you know, Hoo Hoo's ginger beer and things like that. But let's start here, y'all, and I'll kind of throw this out wherever. We're talking about, especially as it relates to bars and restaurants, talking about sustainability. And I think really kind of what we're focusing on, right, is waste as a good example. And everybody knows the plastic straw thing. And, you know, we did a show talking about plastic waste and plastic straws some time ago, and a lot of people pushed back and saying, well, you know, plastic straws are a fraction of the amount of plastic waste on the planet, which is true. My argument, and just kind of starting with this is to kick off the conversation, my argument is that it's also a conversation starter, right, in that the importance of plastic straws, and if you start to kind of, bars are places to communicate information, and if you can educate somebody, plastic straws is a good way to educate people, I think, but... Any thoughts there? And
I agree absolutely. When the conversation started, it was a good way to communicate things that we've all been thinking of. And you know, there's states that started doing the charge for plastic grocery bags and things of that nature as a way for bars and restaurants to kind of join those conversations with the straws. It was a great starting point. But now during pandemic, like we almost every single person wants a straw and everything is double wrapped. Like all of our plastic silverware is plastic wrapped. And I just felt like we went backwards from where we were because of pandemic. And I'm hoping that after we get out of this, it'll go back to the same conversation of like, we need to reduce these wastes in ways that are still conducive to a healthy service. Mm-hmm. For both guests and, you know.
So this is a really good point that you bring up because maybe people aren't really thinking about that as we've emphasized. I mean, we've always had go drinks here and we'll probably get into that in a little bit. But emphasizing, you know, go food these days, that by kind of by definition, right, is going to be plastic materials and paper materials and things. What do you think, Cheyenne?
I agree. It's been really difficult. We were doing a lot before the pandemic to try to increase our sustainability over at Bakery Bar. But after reopening, we didn't used to do delivery food and we started offering that in order to increase our sales like a lot of restaurants and bars did. And that involved obviously getting disposable to-go containers and napkins and like Jen said, plastic wrapped utensils and mm-hmm. double wrapped everything. It's just really hard when... The industry is suffering such a loss to follow through with what our intentions, what we want to do, sure. And go the sustainable route when we, so many businesses are just trying to keep their heads above water.
Hey, and you raise a really good point there too, Cheyenne. And I think we all know this, you know, one of the tenets of sustainability is actually being in business, like sustaining your business.
Yep.
So you can't fault people for that. Matthew, what are your thoughts?
I think the first thing that you brought up is definitely a good point in that, you know, the whole conversation about straws was on one hand a bit of a red herring. Like you mentioned, you know, straws are a really good place to start, but there's this whole like ecosystem of plastic. But as you said, it really is a good conversation starter in that, you know, it makes you consider every single thing that you're pulling in and bringing out and like where it comes from, the whole carbon footprint of said item. Also, like, yeah, COVID's made it entirely more difficult by like leaps and bounds to do anything sustainable because everything's in plastic. The straws have to be wrapped. It's made it very difficult. And as Cheyenne said, like, I really hope that once this whole thing is over, the most important thing that we need to consider is how we're going to revamp and retool and get back to the things that we were trying to focus on pre-pandemic, which is reducing waste, reducing plastic, reducing shipment. Unfortunately, bars and restaurants are one of the more wasteful entities of this country. And I think this is a really good opportunity to rethink everything, really.
Great, yeah.
Going forward.
Good point. So let's go ahead and do this. So we kind of, we put the COVID spin on this and we talk about and that. So let's kind of either set the way back machine to pre-COVID times and addressing things that you wanted to address before this occurred, or, you know, take it the other way, how things can be addressed moving forward. You raise a great point, Matthew, about being able to use this opportunity to reevaluate. But for listeners out there, I had brought up the plastic straws for the reasons why we just said, and also people probably know that one, right? They're kind of a poster child sort of issue with all of this. But what are some of the other areas, say with a bar or a restaurant? Let's identify some of the areas of waste that people, maybe they know or maybe they don't know.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to set my program up, I specifically wanted a canned beer and wine program as opposed to as bottles, because New Orleans is notorious for not being able to recycle glass.
Or recycle.
Let's just start there. Like, at least if we did cans, we could save them and take them in ourselves. Thought being.
Uh-huh.
Another thing is that using more citric acids and different types of acids in place of citrus, the fluctuating costs, the shipping them in, and the just different, like, sometimes you get a lot of really great fresh flavor out of juice. Sometimes you don't. So you got all this waste that accumulates from juicing fresh citrus, and staying on top of that and what to do with the waste of it. I have a very, very, very small coffee program, but we make our own cold brews. So those coffee grounds we like give to gardeners, and there are just small different ways that our program could possibly make a slight impact, and some of that has absolutely been thwarted in the times we are now, but that's where my brain went as far as what little impact could we have to still make somewhat of a difference.
Okay. Can you guys tell, for my own benefit and for listeners out there, what with using citric acids as opposed to using fresh citrus fruit, so obviously the end user waste is limited, right? Because you're not ending up with a bunch of rotting fruit or peels and so on and so forth. But what are the differences? Like, how do they perform? Is the production of it more sustainable than when you kind of, all things considered, shipping fresh produce and all that?
Yeah, it's a lot more consistent as far as the flavor profiles. It longer lasting, obviously, because if you once you juice, you get a good couple of days before the quality dramatically starts to reduce and can spoil. Sometimes we obviously go through a lot of limes in our production, but we do need to have some lemons and some oranges, and then we have three of them that'll just go bad because we can't get to them.
Right.
So you have to have it there just in case, but then, you know, there's a lot of waste involved with that.
Okay. Are you guys using any of that stuff at, like, are you using any of that at Bakery Bar or considered it?
We definitely use citric acid in some of our drinks, absolutely. When you're juicing, it's a lot. Even when you buy bottled, like, lemon and lime juice, it's all about the waiting game of when it's going to get bad. And there is just a lot of waste. It's kind of hard to predict. It's difficult to predict. I'm sure it might be easier for you, but, like, the amount of limes, the amount, like, you probably go through a ton more limes than I do over at El Cucuy. But it's difficult to predict what you're going to need, and there does tend to be a lot of waste in terms of produce that gets bought. I mean, even in terms of we use mint, and at the moment we're using Thai basil as a garnish.
Oh, wow, right.
And the quality can be inconsistent. There is a lot of waste, and researching and trying to develop ways to cut down on that waste in every aspect of just producing drinks, I think, is super valuable and super helpful in the industry.
Yeah, we started going so far as to, we were getting a product that was a lime liqueur, and we started making our own lime cordial just so that we could at least zest the limes that we were already juicing. Because we don't really do, that's another thing, is I don't have a lot of garnishes. A lot of bars, you know, they automatically will put a slice of fruit or a garnish with every single drink that goes out. And I have always thought that was wasteful if it didn't actually enhance the end product. Like, why do you need a lime wedge on a lime margarita?
It's just going to make it too acidic at that point once you squeeze the lime out.
So we literally do not serve a wedge of lime with our margaritas. And that thought process led me to, okay, so we don't need peels. We don't need, you know, these other things. How can we use this product in a way? I wanted to make a citrus stock, but the amount of production that kind of goes through, we have limited kitchen space, so us fighting for space to produce those things isn't great. But what we can do is we can zest. We can zest before we juice. Mm-hmm. And we can make a product that'll last us a couple of weeks as opposed to a few days. And that definitely has helped extend and also helped reduce the waste that goes out.
Okay. You guys got about a minute and a half before we take our first break. But because I think you raised another interesting point, right? We're talking about garnishes. And maybe people don't think, because in this world of Instagram, and I'll use the term that I like to use here, cocktail heroism, is very much, you know, like playing this super crazy garnish game. But we are inviting a lot of waste, aren't we? At that point,
So I was the bar director at Cavern for about a year. One of the things that we did,
which is just so people from outside Cavern the area, bar, uptown New Orleans,
uptown on Magazine Street, part of the LeBlanc and Smith crew. I was a bar director there from like September 18 or 19, maybe. One of the things that we did was we made tinctures out of every fruit. So we would buy, you know, orange, lime, lemon, and instead of garnishing your old fashioned with an orange peel, we would peel the oranges ahead of time, soak them in Everclear for 3 days, strain it, lengthen it a little bit. Essentially, long story short, I could get like 350 cocktails out of like 6 oranges.
Wow.
Instead of, you know, how many oranges would you be left with for 350 old fashions? We're talking like, you know, cases.
Yeah.
So this one little ball of tincture out of 6 oranges would last us months. And so I just didn't have to buy oranges or lemons or limes. We did the same thing for Sazeracs. We did the same thing for daiquiris. I've got some lime tincture here hand.
We'll put a picture of that on the
You can spray it on your hand. You can smell the lime oil.
Okay.
And so, again, like, the thing that we focused on the most was reducing the amount of stuff that we were bringing in. So instead of my produce cost went down by, like, 75%.
Wow.
So I took that money and spent it on, you know, better biodynamic wine, organic wine, local beer.
Okay.
So you reduce your produce. But these things, I mean, doing stuff like tinctures or cordials, like you mentioned, like making a lime cordial in-house, a triple sec, you've got all the ingredients that you need to make that stuff in-house. Now, I'm not talking to making like chartreuse or something crazy or bitters.
Right.
You know, those people do it better than we can.
You got to be a monk, and that goes a little far.
Right. Which we're not. We're just bartenders. But there are things like this that you can do to lengthen your produce by like tenfold.
So and we're going to take a break here real quick, you guys, but so we'll come back and talk about this. But I think it's important because what you've achieved two things. You've lessened your inputs And you've increased your shelf life of this stuff as well, so spoilage goes down.
And it looks cool if you spray something on a glass. People, I mean, if you want the entertainment aspect.
Okay, good point, Matthew. Thank you. You guys are going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to come back to chat a little bit more about sustainability. Come on back.
The Mayhaw is the craft cocktail bar located in the historic St. Rock Market. Join us every day for happy hour from 4 to 7 p.m. and weekly specials like Tiki Tuesdays, Whiskey Wednesdays, and Thrifty Thursdays. The Mayhaw offers local craft brews and a robust and ethically sourced wine selection for enjoyment with your meal on the patio or for carryout. The Mayhaw is excited to present Mayhaw Mobile, a cocktail, beer, and wine delivery service. Learn more at strochmarket.com.
Sitting here, la la, waiting for my ya-ya. Oh. I'm sitting here, la la, waiting for my ya-ya.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for listening in. Brian Diaz here doing the NOLA Drink Show, and we are here at St. Rock Market. That's what I'm trying to say. I just had a sip of overproofed vodka, so hence the rocket. Here we go. We are blasting off here on the show. St. Rock Market, yes, and we're talking about sustainability, chatting with Jen, Matthew, and Cheyenne. Thanks to the three of you for being here and taking time. During the break, y'all, Matthew, we were playing show and tell, basically, is what was going on. And so we talked a little bit about the tincture that you made. Tell us about the orange peels that we got going on.
So kind of getting back into our last subject, essentially, as you guys have probably noticed this as well, the most popular drinks post-pandemic have been old-fashions and margaritas, right? So what happens is you peel all these oranges.
Why?
I think people want comfort.
Easy. Okay. Yeah.
They don't really care about craft cocktails anymore. They want something they're familiar with, and they just want a well-made old fashioned.
Okay.
Or a margarita.
Things they can't perfect at home.
There you go.
Fair enough. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay. Good call.
So you end up with all these peeled oranges. And as I was saying, basically you just peel oranges. You put some overproof vodka, which this stuff is from Atelier V. Which is local. We use their Buck 25 vodka. Peel oranges, put the stuff on top, let it sit for a few days, strain the peels off, add some water to lengthen it. You've got, 8 to 10 ounces of this tincture, and that makes, several hundred cocktails. Whereas a handful of oranges would only make a handful of old fashioned.
Sure. So, Matthew, give us that spec then. So if you made this, let me back up. So it's drawing the oil, the essence oils out, right?
Any high proof alcohol, higher the proof, the better. But any alcohol is going to pull all the flavor out.
Okay.
Sugar performs the same process. An oleosaccharum, however you want to pronounce it. This is another way that you can reduce your waste. But these natural things are going to pull all the oil and the flavor out of the peels. Once you discard the peels or the husk of your citrus, there's basically nothing left. All the flavor's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal as a bar to reduce waste is to basically take any piece of your inventory, extract all the value, and by the time you do throw it in the trash or preferably compost it, there will be nothing left.
Right. So spec us out an old fashioned using this, because I'm sure people are wondering wow, what quantity do I use? How are you getting so much out of so little?
So essentially, instead of, peeling one giant swath of peel for an orange peel and spritzing it over an old fashioned. And again, this can go for a lemon peel on a Sazerac, a lime peel on a daiquiri. Basically, you have a spritzer bottle, an atomizer, and you just spritz it over the top. And all you're going to get on the top is just pure orange oil or lemon oil or lime oil on a daiquiri. And again, it just makes better use of your product.
Okay. Great. So you're just able just to spray it to get the essence would as if you're expressing a peel.
Hairspray or something,
Gotcha.
Just hit it on the top. It's that simple.
Okay. Gotcha.
The same way people spritz herbsane on Sazerac.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thank you. So, Cheyenne, let me ask you this question, because we were talking about garnishes before, and I kind of wanted to ask one other thing here. We were sort of talking about cocktail porn and cocktail heroism and all that with Instagram and going really far on garnishes. Do you, and Jen, I'll have you chime in on this too. Do you find that if you serve a drink, and Matthew, you mentioned a cabin that you didn't have garnishes at all, do people even really care? I mean, let's put the cocktail heroes aside, right?
And a deep pause.
Fair enough. So I'm not talking about whose tales of the cocktail game is better than others, right?
Of course.
But I'm just talking about average, Joe or Jane consumer. Do they care?
Honestly, the answer is yes, they do care.
Okay.
And it depends on I will say it depends on the type of bar and the type of restaurant and the type of clientele you typically get at your establishment. However, I mean, the first thing I thought of when we mentioned this topic earlier was tiki bars. You can't take garnishes away from tiki bars.
Absolutely.
Like,
right.
half of the experience is the garnish. And
my good buddy Jeff Berry would not have a publication contract in his cocktail books. We want to keep Jeff in business, but go on, sorry.
Exactly. But even over at Bakery Bar, we just finished Mardi Gras, and I made this specific Mardi Gras martini for the season, and it came with a rim of purple, gold, and green sugar, and we put a plastic baby in it, reminiscent of when you find plastic babies in king cake.
Right.
Sustainable? No, all those plastic babies ended up in the trash.
Right.
But you take one photo of that for Instagram, like we were saying, the cocktail heroes.
Right.
And let me tell you, 85% of the people who came and asked for that martini saw that post on social media. It does make a difference. Garnishes do make a difference.
Okay.
And that's what makes things difficult when you're trying to incorporate sustainability into marketing your products, especially at this time when we are trying to market ourselves and stay in business. Like you said earlier, sustaining our business is also very important.
Yeah, absolutely. There is no sustainability without being
exactly.
in business. It doesn't matter. Well, Jen, does that create like you're talking about maybe a teaching moment in these situations? Like we were talking about, if you say you do a Rita, right, and it's already got the proper citrus balance in the way you make the drink, do you really need the lime wedge in there?
That would be my point, where my main background is like the dive bars, the vodka sodas with, I want 6 limes. Well, how about I just give you a little squeeze of lime juice? You're going to have the same effect, and you're not going to have this like garbage in your cup from all these lime wedges, where you can literally just squirt some lime juice in there and have the same effect that you're trying to get. So where I go adversely, I absolutely agree with what Cheyenne said. It's like there is a time for the beauty of it. There's a time for it, definitely is something that adds to the cocktail. And then there is also just the, I want a lemon wedge because I'm just so used to having a lemon wedge on my vodka soda.
Right.
That, you know, there's the other side of that coin where I think we just need to be conscious of, don't just put it on there because you were always told it should be on there. There are other alternatives to a lime or a peel or a wedge that we could use to reduce that nonsense waste.
Sure. I mean, what do you think, Matthew? Because like at Cavern, you said you weren't using any garnishes at all. I'm assuming you engaged in that conversation with people occasionally.
We had to. Mm-hmm. I feel like people want garnishes because they're pretty, it's visual, it's aesthetically pleasing. But if you give them drinks and the drink's good enough, like I find that you actually don't need stuff on the glass. Also, it is a very, very good teaching moment. People will be like, where's my orange peel? Well, I spritz this orange tincture on it, and then you kind of go through the process with them. What is that in the bottle? Well, instead of peeling this orange and I end up with all these oranges, it's a really good conversation starter. It's a really good conversation to have with people. And any moment that you can take to make people more aware of the situation, how much stuff that we're throwing out, I mean, that's a net positive.
Sure.
You know, even if they're offended by it. Honestly, I don't care. I don't care if you want a garnish or not. We're not a tiki bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of push back on like, well, tiki has to have this garnish stuff. It's like, I mean, it does because we've been told that it does because Beachcomber started this thing like this. But like, does it still? I mean, mint's one thing, but we don't have to load up every single glass, and it can still be a tiki drink. So I mean, it's a difficult conversation. It's a difficult thing. I understand that people want stuff pretty, but you know, if you give somebody something and it tastes good enough and like, they sip it.
Yeah, make a mint syrup and have that mint extend for several more.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a syrup in like this one bag of mint or stuff that you grow outside,
right,
or on your rooftop or whatever. You can make, you know, quarts, gallons of mint syrup.
You know, and that's a good shine, please.
Oh, sorry. I think it's also interesting that like you took this problem that you saw and you came up with solutions for it via tinctures, and you took the steps to educate people. I think it's also just a really interesting way to challenge the bartenders that we work with, our coworkers, our peers, in the industry to come up with aesthetically pleasing drinks without necessarily using the waste. Mm-hmm. I think that's a, I don't know, it's a good puzzle for myself to work on. I think it's a
Yeah, my bartenders actually challenged me because I was purchasing a lime cordial to sort of like kind of get away from using lime juice or in every single thing. So I was purchasing this lime alcoholic product, and my team challenged me to be like, hey, we can zest these limes and make a cordial or an oleo and do it all in-house, and we can do it non-alcoholic because we actually are a restaurant. We have to serve kids, so we could make, we could take club soda and take that and make a lime, like just a lime soda for mm-hmm. our guests and mm-hmm. things like that. So that we have multiple uses for one product, and now that we've taken the alcohol out of it, it's just infinitely more things that we can do. But also saves us a ton of money. Mm-hmm. Like, it saves us so much money. That product was delicious and lovely, and I really loved supporting them. But ultimately, it was, we had to pay for the cost to get it shipped. We had to, you know, it's like there's a lot involved, and we've saved ourselves so much money for not having to buy that product, and a product that we already get, we're just getting more use out of.
Right. Let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here. We're going to come back and continue the conversation. Talking about sustainability behind the bar here, friends. Take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
Dad's been shucking dozens since 42.
Brought to you by the St. Rock Market, a local food hall featuring 12 unique food and beverage entrepreneurs serving globally inspired meals from barbecue platters to Mediterranean cuisine. Located at 2381 St. Claude Avenue, the St. Rock Market is open every day of the week for breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, and cocktails. We offer online ordering, curbside pickup, and both indoor and patio dining. Learn more at strockmarket.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for bringing me a drink, Sophie. Shout out to Sophie Burton, who is the beverage director here at St. Rock Market. Yay. Hanging out, bringing drinks. Really majorly important stuff. But we're talking about sustainability behind the bar. And these guys are going to stick around for another shot with NOLA Drinks, our podcast-only segment. We're going to get into the weeds a little more there. So there's a couple different things that I wanted to talk about. How about if in this segment we do this? Especially for those of you coming like out of like the bar restaurant kind of gig, what about collaboration between bar and kitchen? Is this a way to mitigate waste as well?
Yeah, we make our own pepper tequila, and the kitchen also does a lot with citrus. So we definitely find ways to use products that they're using in our drinks, syrups, and things of that nature. So we're not buying things unnecessarily, but we're also making sure things get utilized. And I love culinary. I came from a fine dining background, so the food side of it also always ties into my drinks in some manner. So having that ability.
Yeah, and so being able to, like, say, source something that's seasonal and local, right? Is this
exactly,
a part of
yeah.
the game here? Yeah. What do you think, Cheyenne?
Absolutely. This is the first, Bakery Bar is one of the first bars, restaurants I've worked in that sources quite more than normal, I would say, things from the kitchen, which is really great. For instance, one of the drinks on our menu right now is called the Hard Knock Life. And we had some sort of dessert dish from the kitchen that involved maraschino cherries, like the bright red, not the Luxardo ones.
Okay,
like the,
yeah.
Bright red one for one of our desserts. It was a really fun dessert. But we also smoke meats for Bakery Bar for our menu. We have a smoker out back.
Okay.
And this drink, the Hard Knock Life, one of my bartenders, Joe, created. And it involves taking the maraschino juice from that and smoking it in the smoker. So that's like taking waste that normally would have gotten thrown out. We do that sort of thing all of the time.
It's a great idea.
That's a real, yeah.
Smoked cherry juice, involving it in a cocktail. We did that a couple of menus back with a different sort of cherry juice. We smoked that as well.
And we know the juice from those cherries, the shelf life is, that's like Twinkie level shelf life.
Exactly. It'll probably go bad when we're all dead and gone.
Right. Oh, that's okay.
Yeah,
very cool.
There's a lot of ingredients that we actually work very closely with our kitchen. chef Joel over there, he is, his palate is one that I trust the most. And so there's a lot of collaboration between the back of house and the front of house where we ask each other to taste our different products. They give their opinion and they might say, oh, we're actually using this seasonal fruit that we brought in specifically for this dish. You should try it in that drink. And it helps reduce any sort of, it helps just tighten it up a little bit in terms of waste.
Sure. I think that makes sense. And it was one of those things that, you know, to me, was almost kind of shocked. You know, I know more and more people have been doing that. But just even going back a few years, you know, you would hear like, you know, the bar program is ordering this amount of produce and this amount of stuff. And then the kitchen's ordering this amount of, and it's like a totally separate order. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like such a no-brainer kind of concept because, I mean, you're reducing costs also.
Absolutely.
Right?
Collaboration, I think, is something that should be encouraged at any place where there's a restaurant and a bar. There's just endless possibilities, especially when you have such a creative staff. There's so many opportunities to work with.
Right. Did you want? Go ahead, man.
So on that note, the collaboration between, you know, front of the house, back of the house, it's a no-brainer, as you guys said. Like, you know, you take like fennel fronds, you can make liqueurs out of fennel fronds. You can make shrubs or tinctures or liqueurs out of pineapple husk, or you can plant pineapple tops. You can take the ends of strawberries, and I mean, there's so much stuff that gets thrown away. But, you know, more importantly, like kind of dipping into like the theoretical here, the symbiotic relationship that needs to be developed between the front of the house and the back of the house, which is happening, is also like the same thing as like the symbiotic relationship that needs to develop between like us and nature. Like, we have to do better. Like, we have to consider every single thing that we bring in, where it comes from, how long it's shipped. And, you know, it's kind of a microcosm. Like, if the front and the back of the house can work better together and reduce waste and do stuff cool, like smoke cherry juice, I mean, it's better for everyone. And and you can extrapolate that. Like, if you think of this broader picture, this is the goal, is that we need to be more aware and more responsible with what we do with our lives, you know, in regards to the world. I mean, we're at a point that it's got to change. And we have to ask ourselves the question, like, what is necessary and what's not necessary as a restaurant? And I think it's so cool, like, going back to the cherry juice thing, it's like you have this waste byproduct. I mean, this is the reason that rum is around, right? Because they had all this molasses.
Absolutely.
Like, what are we going to do with it?
Right.
So let's do something with it. It's important. I think the more that we push on this road, like, again, like, hopefully once this stuff is all over with, the pandemic, like, we kind of refocus, like, you know, on doing the things that are more responsible. And it's about asking questions and how we can better utilize, like, our resources. And it's very important.
Consistently challenging what you do.
Consistently challenging. Every single thing that you pick up, you need to think about, like, where does this come from? What can I do? Do I need this?
Right. Well, and I think, you know, the smart thing, too, and we've touched on this, but obviously when you ask yourself those questions, you know, part of sustainability is economic sustainability. So you are, you know, if you're running a business, you're lowering costs by doing this. So this isn't just tree hugger stuff. This is actually, you're lowering your cost. It's legitimate. And you know, and I'll add this, and I'm going to ask you guys, because we got about 2.5 minutes real quick before we close out. But, you know, using these teaching moments things as an opportunity to teach people things, you know, I maybe, like, if I have a great old fashioned somewhere, I probably remember it. But if I go in and you show me what you're doing with your old fashioned, I'm never going to forget that.
Sure.
And that teachable moment thing, it sticks with you. Mm-hmm. So I do think that there's a value in that. But you guys, you're going to stick around for another Shot with Nola Drinks, our podcast only segment. Before we close out here in about 2.5 minutes, Jen, let me start with you. How do we find your wonderful restaurant? And tell us, you know, online and address and all that good stuff.
We are at 3507 Chocotulis, El Cucuy Nola.
Spell it, please.
ELCUCUY. We are pretty much right smack dab in the middle of Chocotulis. And we are there every day from 11:30 a.m. until 9:30 p.m., except we're closed on Taco Tuesday. And when people ask why, we're like, because we have tacos every day. We celebrate tacos all the time.
Yeah, there doesn't need, I mean, that's why pigeonhole one day?
Exactly, huh? Right? Yeah, we've got them all the time. But yeah, we're there 6 days a week from 11:30 a.m. until 9:30 p.m.
Awesome. Matthew, Hoo Hoo's Ginger Brew.
I am one of the owner operators of Hoo Hoo's Ginger Brew. Our company is Hoo Hoo's Soda Co. We've been around for about 4 years in New Orleans. We are currently kind of on a hiatus because of the pandemic, but we should be in grocery stores soon. So look forward to that. I'm also a bartender at St. Rock Market. That's 2381 St. Claude. here a few days a week. We do pretty cool stuff here and also make syrups for Cocktail & Sons, which is another local company. Shout out to my boy Max.
Right on. Cool. And StRockNola.com, StRockMarketNola.com?
I think it's StRockMarket.com.
Yeah, okay. Is that right? Yeah,
one
Sophie's
simple Google
over there.
Search should solve
yes.
that.
R-O-C-H. Just
yeah,
remember that.
R-O-C-H.
R-O-C-H.
Sure.
Cheyenne, how about Bakery Bar?
Yeah, I am the bar manager / co-manager over at Bakery Bar. We are located on 1179 Annunciation. Yeah, you can follow us on Instagram at Bakery Bar Nola, and our website is bakery.bar.
Very cool. And cakes. We have to say cakes.
Oh, yes. We are known for our dobage cakes.
The best dobage in town.
The best dobage in town. We also have incredible cocktails and incredible food.
Yeah, the food's really good there, too, and the cakes are amazing. We would be remiss if we didn't say just, I just want to say cake. I need to, when I, yeah, I got it.
This is true.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you all for being here. Friends, if you're listening on the radio, go to noladrinks.com and get the podcast. These guys are going to stick around. We're going to continue the conversation on another Shot with Nola Drinks. But again, if you are listening on the radio, thanks for being here. Remember to be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. Take care of each other. Cheers, y'all. Everybody, yep, appreciate you sticking around for another Shot with Nola Drinks. Hope you are finding this conversation very interesting, and it's an important conversation, and I think there's a lot to gather and garner from this, whether you're in the industry or you're a patron, things you're looking to do at home, all that good sort of stuff. What we're going to do is we're going to bounce right back over to the St. Rock Market and continue our conversation with Matthew, Jennifer, and Cheyenne. Here we go. All right, everybody, have another Shot with Nola Drinks. We're here at St. Rock Market, as you know, and we're talking about sustainability behind the bar and restaurants and some other things. Obviously, a big topic, y'all, that we could continue on for a long period of time here. We were having an inspiring conversation during one of the breaks, a couple breaks ago, and Matthew, you and Cheyenne, all four of us were talking about this. You know, the idea, we touched on this during the interview too, you know, challenging ourselves to reevaluate and think. But you guys are having this great conversation about, you know, like, I hadn't thought of that, or I hadn't thought of that, or here's a great way to go about it. And can you guys kind of elaborate on, let's take that one step further, about reevaluation, thinking, challenging each other, sharing ideas, that kind of thing?
I mean, if you stop and consider, like, everything that you're bringing in as a restaurant and a bar, if you put your mindset to that, once you bring in everything, like, say, I've got this stuff in front of me, these things. I've got some, like, strawberries. I've got lemons, limes, oranges. And you actually take the time to consider how far they are shipped here, what packaging they are in, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But you actually take the time to consider, you know, what can I do with this stuff? There's so much in the kitchen or the bar that goes in the trash can that you can utilize. A perfect example, and one that's, like, pretty accessible, is, like, aquafaba. Like, chickpea water is a really, really good substitute for egg whites.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, so okay. You can use chickpea water. Let's say the kitchen's banging hummus or whatever, doing anything with chickpea, and they've got this water, which is going to last forever. You can just dash that into your cocktail. Makes it vegan, vegetarian. You're taking a waste product, and instead of having egg whites, which then you have a yolk.
That you throw away, which is, absolutely.
That stuff comes in packaging as well. You kind of extrapolate this stuff. And once you have that mindset, there's so much that you can do to improve your situation, cost-wise, carbon footprint-wise, at your restaurant. And I'll bring it back to what you said earlier, like the maraschino cherry juice, like olive juice. You could go on and on. There's so many, like I mentioned earlier, the butts of strawberries. You can take the butts of strawberries and make strawberry vodka or something, strawberry rum.
Or a cordial like we talked about
sure,
or something.
Yeah, anything.
Just so people know, so we can maybe... Shani, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, I think we touched on earlier when we were talking as well, like as a manager, encouraging the thought experiment and encouraging your bartenders to take something that, especially if they're new to the industry or not quite as experienced and... don't necessarily know things like in terms of the aquafaba or something like that, like introducing them to new techniques of doing things and encouraging thought experiments and how can we reduce our waste and increase our sustainability. Even if those things don't end up maybe on the menu or a regular thing, I think encouraging and rewiring our brains to consider different ideas and to consider different thoughts or the thought process of sustainability and how it affects the food we use and the citrus and the produce and everything that goes through our restaurants and bars. I think just the thought experiment of it itself is valuable.
I think it's probably the most important part of this, right? I mean, and that's how we can ultimately reduce waste and put things into place that allow us to reduce waste and
close
reduce cost
loop.
And close the
exactly.
loop. There you go.
Yeah.
Or even just tighten it up as much as possible.
Tighten it up.
There you go. I like that. Let me ask you this, just because if we were to spec a drink, because like you're talking about using aquafaba in place of egg whites. So obviously we're talking about, like, say, making a sour, right? And so would you use pretty much the same amount of water that you would to egg white to make
You could just put it in a dasher bottle. I mean, you could take an empty Peychaud's bitter bottle or an empty orange bitters bottle or any bitters bottle, throw your aquafaba in there, dash it just like you would bitters, and you're good to go.
Right, okay.
You know.
We talked about mint, and, you know, obviously... produce is going to go bad, right? Fresh produce is going to go bad if you don't use it all. It's just sort of the nature of the beast, I suppose. But like you touched on this, Matthew, and you guys, like you have an outside space, Jen. So being able to mitigate that in some way. So maybe you still want to use fresh mint, but you can garden fresh mint, can't you? And then you do reduce your footprint, and that can be composted, and you haven't purchased it. You're growing it yourself. And we know in this part of the world around Louisiana, you know, mint grows. It's a hardy plant. And it's the reason why it's called yerba buena in Spanish. It grows, you know, it's a weed, basically. It grows really well. So there are ways you can do this, too, where you can garden in your own space if you have the space to do this, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
When we were designing our space and our outdoor especially, we were talking about the plants to put in. And I specifically, on our deck, it's a very large kind of wall. I wanted to build a garden wall for my herbs. We haven't yet been able to do so, but it is something that we are working on, planning on. We don't have a lot of drinks that we use mint, but we use a lot of cilantro and other herbs that we can use both for the kitchen and for the bar. And if I had the ability to, I guess, grow it myself as opposed to purchasing it, I would find a use for it.
Sure.
But when it comes to herbs and things like that, you can extend the shelf life or actually extend close the loop a bit if you use the stems for the tinctures and things like that, where it's not as pretty of a garnish, but you still get to extract the flavor that you need in a way that is still sustainable, and you can use a product that would normally also go in the garbage.
That's a great point. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So are we seeing kind of more, obviously, you know, outdoor space is at a premium in certain situations, and especially in urban situations. But, you know, there are solutions to this, right? We can garden indoors. You can grow things with high-pressure sodium lights and halide lights and all that kind of stuff. Are we seeing more people doing that in the restaurant space and just in general, or is it...
I think in other places.
Okay.
Not so much around here. Not so much around here. They're happening, but I've definitely noticed the articles online about different community gardens. I think somebody in Atlanta... Just started a community garden for kind of specifically bars.
Actually, I was just going to give a shout out. That's my friend Kiata Mincy Parker, who actually started a Sip of Paradise garden in Atlanta. So it's an urban garden, but only for bartenders. Actually, Kiata was that's going to be a podcast coming out in about, well, people have heard it by the time they hear this one. So, yeah, really cool. A really cool idea. So
we talked about that at USBG a while ago, about partnering with a community garden or with one of the schools, the Edible Schoolyard or something like that, that would grow gardens for bartenders and like help maintain some things that we would use on the daily, that we could support them in a way they could also support us.
I love that.
How about rooftops?
Rooftops, like, another one. Yeah.
There's so many rooftops around the city, and like I don't know, like the I'm just a bartender. I don't know like the legal regulations of like growing stuff on rooftops. But I mean,
hey, this is New Orleans. It's always better to ask for forgiveness and permission.
Exactly.
You know, why does every single building in the city with a gutter should have a rain barrel from Greenlight? Like, if we really want to have this conversation, like, we can dip into Mardi Gras, which is like a whole nother like set of
we'll talk about ideas. That next time, because we tried to tee that one up, but that's a whole
podcast,
other thing.
But, I just had to mention it, but like there are so many creative solutions that we can think about, and we can look to other countries, like, which we have, like the Netherlands, Malaysia, Singapore. Like, these people are actually redoing stuff. New Orleans in the past year hasn't done anything to improve our situation environmentally, and I think that's a real shame. One of the stories that I remember reading about a few years ago, and this is like way off topic, but it just shows you how the city is, and I'll make it quick. Costco built this giant parking lot in Mid-City. The city did not require them to do anything as far as like rainwater retention or solar panels or green space or nothing. And the Costco people like are just kind of laughed at the city, and it's like, it's kind of ridiculous. Like, there's so much more that we could do. We've got rooftops. We've got space. There's so much concrete in New Orleans. Like, we can solve this problem. We can be more responsible. We just got to do it.
And there is a grocery store that shall not be named that they did build a garden rooftop, and that was one of the things that absolutely did kind of impress me.
Yeah,
is that, you know, they wanted to have that available to not only sell but just a way to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and there's supposed to be a bar up there too, right? Wasn't that the whole idea?
I think it won't be
in a bar. So there's a good combination right there. Well, how about this? Before we close out everything, y'all, because we got to get Cheyenne on the road here. If you're running a business, if you're running a bar, if you're running a restaurant, what are some practical? We've talked about practical things we can do with actual products, right, and produce and such to reduce waste, but to systematize it. How do you put it in the manual? I guess I'll ask the question that way. Is this a conversation you need to constantly have with your purchasing? Is it a conversation you need to have with your team? I mean, integrating this into the, like you were talking about the thought experiment, Cheyenne, it was a great term that you mentioned. Is that how we need to do? Do we need to integrate the thinking into our entire process? And
100%.
I probably answered my own question. But
100%. It needs to be something, especially with, I'm not going to get into politics, but climate change is a thing.
Yeah.
And we have so many fucking politicians who are like, that's not a thing. At least on some level, I think it makes me feel better about what I do if that is something that I'm constantly incorporating into what I can control, into what I can affect, and what I can, sustainability is hard, especially after this pandemic. It's expensive also. I feel like we didn't really talk too much about how expensive these practices can be. We did talk a lot about the citrus, but in terms of ordering like sustainable straws or like plasticware or like anything that's paper or plastic, those things can be expensive.
Right. We're talking about it now. So, I mean, absolutely. Making these decisions can be...
The system is set up against
exactly
that.
We are trying it over at Bakery Bar, I think, eventually. And I think a lot of restaurants, at least in New Orleans that I've seen, I haven't been out of the city in a long time at this point, but at least in New Orleans, what I've seen a lot of restaurants and bars are doing electronic versions of closing out your tab and, like, looking at the menu. And that reduces paper.
So much paper.
If you work in the industry, you know that when you run a check, there's at least three papers that print out. That's all that ends up in the trash.
Right.
Cue the CVS joke.
And those are just little, like, so, yeah, it's a CVS.
Thanks.
It's 5 feet tall. You got one thing. Mm-hmm. I think, so that's the next step I know that Bakery Bar is going to take, is we're going to move to full or at least as much as possible, like electronically tabbing people out. It's hard in a pandemic.
Sure. And it's hard in general. I mean, even putting the pandemic aside, right? I mean, so I think it's, and we've touched on this to a degree, but I think the point like we were making earlier is that, okay, so maybe you're taking on this cost over here to be more sustainable, but then by doing some of the other things that we talked about, you're reducing costs over here. And hopefully you're still coming out ahead, or at least maybe zeroing out to some degree, right?
Right.
Take the money you spend on extra citrus, stuff that you're going to throw away, paper, beverage napkins, straws, like toothpicks, like you can go on and on. I mean, there's so many things that are wasteful behind a bar. You take that money and you put it towards buying better wine, but better wine that's more sustainable, more,
right?
Better suits the planet, biodynamic, organic, whatever. Like, you take that cost that you were spending and you put it towards it. Yeah, I gotta have wine, but at least I'm going to buy wine from people that are more responsible.
Right.
Or somebody who's giving back to hurricane relief. I mean, go on and on.
Sure. Like people supporting vineyard workers, actually.
The Absolute Elixir. Like, they're doing really good stuff with the environment.
Okay.
Like they're, I can't even recall it right now, but go on their website and they talk about it's sustainable. It's very cool stuff. So I would prefer to spend money on that than beverage napkins.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a great point.
Or extra limes that are going to go bad.
Yeah, that are going to go bad.
Yeah, the farm-to-table movement started a lot of these conversations in restaurants, and now the garden-to-glass in bars is all about using products that are local, nearby. You reduce the waste or reduce the costs and the waste of transportation from long distance, the shipping costs and everything else. So the more you can source the closer to you, the more sustainable it's going to be for the most part. I mean, there's always going to be those
exceptions, sure. But
for the most part, you know, it's less fuel, less just so many other things. Like, I wanted to do cans more specifically because glass is so expensive to ship and with a recycling problem. But who would have thought opening a Mexican spirit-based restaurant was going to prove difficult, except during a pandemic when all supply chains basically got cut off.
Right.
And everybody wanted things in cans now, and how much more people were... like all of the ready to drinks that are now canned. So now there's a can shortage. Now it's like all the things that you try to do and try to not have certain plasticware or utensils or straws now during a pandemic. It's like, well, all of this has just gone out the window. Where do we start? But also make it so most of our things that we get are either basically as organic as possible, mm-hmm. and recyclable as possible from what we can do.
Sure. So. And sourcing your stuff locally too, you're supporting local economy, local tax base, all that good stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So local jobs, of course, which is very important. Well, y'all, before we close things out here, can I get you to tell people one more time where we find you on the street and online, as we like to say? How about Bakery Bar, Cheyenne?
Yes, I am the bar manager / co-manager over at Bakery Bar. It's located at 1179 Annunciation. You can also find us online at bakery.bar, and our Instagram handle is bakerybarnola. Specialize in
cakes.
Dobage cake.
You're known for
Dobage cakes. Also have obviously a fantastic cocktail and a fantastic food program.
Yeah, it's great. It's great over there. Matthew, how about
Matthew Gardner, I'm one of the owner operators of Hoo Hoo's Soda Co. We make Hoo Hoo's Ginger Brew. We will be on shelves hopefully soon. I'm also a bartender at St. Rock Market. The only thing I have to say today is please don't let the pandemic stop our progress, because I feel like the climate change, like sustainability conversation just halted, obviously, because it's the most important story in the history of the world, this COVID thing. But once this is over, let's get back to it and let's change the world.
Right on.
Rethink.
Thank you, Matthew. And Jen.
Absolutely. Jennifer Oblenis, I am the managing partner at El Cucuy Nola, a Mexican street food restaurant in the Irish Channel on Chapultepec, 3507 Chapultepec. You can find us there 6 days a week, Wednesday through Monday, from 11:30 a.m. until 9:30 p.m. You can find our social media handles at El Cucuy Nola on Instagram and Facebook.
Awesome. Thanks, y'all. I really appreciate it. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you.
Pleasure. We'll circle back and we'll do this again. Let's do this post-COVID and see, you know, kind of and see kind of what's been able to sink back in here. Friends, we're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back to close things out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show this week, friends. Happy to have had you here. As always, as I believe I mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to be bringing back our unpaid beer correspondents, Sal Mortellaro and Matt Horney, talking about brews. Yeah, we like to do that with those guys, you know, 3-4 times a year, and just hit on different topics in the world of beer. And this time we're going to be talking about Mexican and Central American style lagers, sip on some of the stuff that Matt's been creating, including a really wonderful Belgian quad that we talk about a little bit. So it's going to be a really interesting beer show, talking brews as we like to do. That's right. Hope you enjoyed this show here, talking about sustainability behind the bar. And more importantly, I hope you got something out of it. I really appreciated the passion that Matthew, Jennifer, and Cheyenne brought to the table. One of the really cool things is we were having a lot of good conversation in between the segments. And Cheyenne, for example, they were actually taking notes during the show and while we were chatting, just to take some of the things that we talked about back to Bakery Bar, where they're the manager. And I think that that's really terrific. It kind of was inspiring to see that. And I think one of the most important things that we talked about, we did talk about some specific things that you can do if you're in the business, running a bar, running a restaurant. I think a lot of this stuff, of course, applies to you if you're at home, trying to be more sustainable at your home bar, trying to be more sustainable in your home kitchen. And also just even things to look for, you know, if this is important to you, and it should be important to everybody, places that you choose to patronize. So things to be on the lookout for, questions to ask when you're at an operation. The two parts, I did say one, but now really there's two parts here that I think are, you know, important to highlight here from this show. The first one, it's very challenging. Okay, it's very challenging for an operation. You know, part of sustainability is being in business. We talked about that. You're not sustainable if you're not in business. And we certainly noted that there are ways that you can, you know, work towards sustainability and reduce costs at the same time. That's part of the win-win scenario here that we're looking for. But even especially, you know, against the backdrop of a pandemic, we mentioned this, that, you know, it's these things can be very, very difficult. And so trying to find that sweet intersection, if you will, of reducing waste and being more cost efficient, it can be challenging. And, you know, so I think we all need to understand that. But that leads me to the second important point. And Matthew articulated this very well, as did everybody. It's a mindset, right? To me, sustainability, it's a journey. It's a path. I mean, yes, there are ideally places, destinations, if you will, that we get to where things are sustainable. But I think the point made is that we can always be better and always improve. And it's that constant improvement process that is so important. And I think that was articulated really well. Consistently, constantly asking yourself, how can I get better? Learn from other people like we did today. I think that's also very important. You know, do your reading, do your homework, be inspired by what others are doing, share knowledge, share information. But just even, as Matthew said, constantly revisiting your operations and making this part of your regular operations system, your standard operating procedure, is reevaluate what you do on a regular basis. Empower your staff to think about it. Empower your staff to help you make decisions and input and bring things they've learned or seen to the table, but constantly looking at how you can reduce waste, how you can be more sustainable, how you can source more responsibly, how you can source more locally, all of those important aspects that lead down the path of sustainability. It's that mindset, it's that thinking, and it's that constant reevaluation that I think is so important here. And so if you take away one thing from that, yes, it's a challenge, but it's a mindset, and trying to imbue what it is that you do in your day-to-day life, what it is that you do at your business, no matter what business you're in, trying to implement that as a regular part of how you operate is really, really important, friends. Thank you for listening this week. We're going to be back talking about beers, as I said. So until next time, here's to you.